Joe Newman on trumpet, and featured guest Frank Foster on tenor sax, leading the band off with Molasses. That's what it's called. Molasses. Tommy Flanagan on piano, Eddie Jones on bass, Bill English on drums. It's from Newman's 1961 album, Good and Groovy. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we're going to get a little bit philosophical today. I'm going to ask us all to be a little philosophical. Well, as you know, the big primary show was held yesterday. The midterm races for the U.S. House and Senate seats and for governorships and state offices that will in turn shape the 2020 presidential election and the political fortunes of the Democratic and Republican parties alike. State-by-state results are still being finalized, but what political analysts are keenly interested in measuring is whether President Donald Trump is helping to grow Republican strongholds, or conversely, whether Democrats are increasing their voter appeal. I mean, they're going to spend endless hours talking about this. And after a while, at least for me, it becomes a boring discussion because it's more of the same. It's just, you know, a shift here and a shift there. But essentially, it is the same old song. And it doesn't leave us, those of us who are neither with the Republicans nor the Democrats, it doesn't leave us with very much in the way of answers. Where does this whole thing leave those of us who oppose the duopoly? You know, we don't care about the Democrats and the Republicans. They've been around, and they've taught us lessons for many, many, many decades. What we're looking for really is a new direction. And I feel really within my bones that we don't have a clear-cut direction. I've talked about it many times. I think the resistance, as people call it, don't have an idea. There's no cogent plan. It's all well and good to say the resistance. Okay, great. That's fine. What's the plan? How do we know we're resisting? And essentially, what are we looking to achieve other than saying no? There are many, many decades spent saying no, and equally many decades equating saying no with resistance. That's not it. I've been talking about the need for people seriously committed to change. People who see the writing on the wall and see how urgent the need is to fashion a different way, to do something, articulate something as a plan. It doesn't have to be all that sophisticated, but it should be strategic. And the plan just can't be, well, we don't like that. That's not a plan. We don't like them, and that's enough to categorize ourselves as resistors and to kid ourselves into thinking that resistance is the same as just saying no. We went through that phase. So I'm asking, because I've run out of answers on this level, what are we doing here as an opposition? What are we looking to achieve? I mean, in practical terms, what are we looking to achieve? When are we going to start talking about a shared vision and about organization to achieve that shared vision? When are we going to get radical about that? You know, this guy just came into office the other day. And there's practically no aspect of our existence as Americans that hasn't in one way or the other been turned upside down. And still we're stuck with the notion that that is enough to motivate us into being the resistance. No, it isn't. Donald Trump is a man with deep mental problems who has had the benefit of his and other people's money to put him in office, and he's executing their plans. What are our plans? Who are our ambassadors? Where are we finding them, if we can find them at all? How are we shaping them? How are we helping them? I think we are operating in a state of delusion about some of the established parties. They're not doing very much in the way that would make you understand or help you to believe that they understand the urgency of the matter. They're still going along with, you know, well, we're going to contest this election and that election and that election. But what is the plan? What is the vision? And how do we coalesce? We don't have to be madly in love with each other. But how do we begin the process of coalescing around strategic plans that will help us achieve a shared goal? We're not hearing this kind of talk. At this critical time, we're getting lots of notices about people having, you know, film festivals and people meeting in the park for an evening of poetry. And we're getting a lot of information about people just organizing themselves, but how and for what purpose, they don't know. They're lost. There's no sense that there's a coalition of effort. And so in the absence of a coalition of effort, we're all targets, and it's no big deal to smack us down. None at all. And these people today, these oligarchs today, these wealthy people today, they're not playing. They're not playing because they see what we see and what we choose to ignore. And that is the strategic resources of our society are no longer in plentiful supply. And all over the world, they're aggregating them however they can with whatever mechanisms they can. They're taking as much of these resources as possible because these resources are running out. We'll soon have to figure out what's the alternative to education. What, because we won't have any. What will be the alternative picture to employment? Because there won't be any. It's a good point of discussion now for Donald Trump, and he's boasting, I should say, lying again about how great he's been, fantastic for employment in the United States. It's a whole different story when you look closer at the numbers. It tells an entirely different story. And the story that it tells is that this thing called employment, which is linked to people's survival, has become not just an expectation, but it is a right. And certain people, as you know, in this country, have rights and others don't. What do we do when education and employment and health care and housing, these basic necessities, become so controlled by the power elites that we literally have to go on our hands and knees begging just for any kind of crumbs that can fall from the table? We're almost there. We're almost at that point. They're fighting among themselves for the largest share possible of any strategic resource. They want it for themselves. It doesn't matter whether they're Chinese or Russian or Taiwanese or British or French or American. This globalist set is busy gobbling up and keeping for themselves as much of what we could call our shared resources as possible. It will include water. It will include electricity. And we don't seem to be getting the picture here. So I'm asking for some more instruction from you. Maybe I'm misreading this whole thing. Maybe we have achieved quite an inroad into the political realm in which we can actually resist. I don't see that we could resist. We're not organized. And in some cases, we don't even agree that we should resist. We saw that with the Starbucks situation where they said, look, we'll capitulate, we'll cooperate so that you could look really good as a company. This is where we are. This is where we're going. So it seems to me we should be thinking very strongly, and actually we're close to the point where we need to do less thinking and more acting. Because we're suffering, as Dr. Leonard Jeffries would say, from the paralysis of analysis. We analyze everything, but we're not doing very much. So is there something else that needs to happen? A redefining of our politics and of our power, such as we understand it to be? is this notion that we actually have achieved a point of critical mass, is that real? Or is that just talk? You know, we have to become, I think, realistic about where we are and where we need to go. But we aren't talking to each other. We are not sharing a vision. And we are not even understanding our inherent and actual power. We're not understanding how we use our power in service of a larger objective, as in getting some goodies. We're talking today, and back in 1966, on this very day, James Meredith, all he wanted to do was go to college, the University of Mississippi. And he was almost shot dead for that. And you look at, here's this one guy. He set out on what he called a walk, in order to bring attention to the exclusion of blacks from the University of Mississippi and other institutions of learning, walking along a highway, and boom, he's shot. He wasn't killed, but he was certainly shot several times. And you say, okay, that happened in 1966. This is 2018. Have we seen any situation akin to what Meredith experienced in 1966, where people understood that they shared, they had a lot in common, and it was imperative to develop a politics that would get them the goodies that they wanted, the necessities that they needed? I don't see evidence of that today. I see people spouting out about, you know, the civil rights and Martin Luther King, and they sing rousing choruses of "We Shall Overcome," but fact is, we are, aren't we? We are overcome. And it would take, unfortunately, something cataclysmic just to bring us together, when we know that it is inevitable that something cataclysmic will occur. And we won't be prepared. We won't have a defense because we're not organized. So please, help me to understand this dilemma that we're in, and how everybody, despite the fact that we're suffering, everybody seems to be progressing. Our suffering has not stopped the craziness in the White House. Our suffering hasn't stopped the insane policies of this administration. You're closing 283 schools in Puerto Rico. You still have people without electricity on that island. You have no really new housing built yet, nor healthcare, adequate healthcare provisions made. You still have people in Flint, Michigan, 4 years after they discovered that the city water was contaminated. You still have people drinking water out of bottles in the United States. So there's something wrong. If there's a resistance, where the heck is it? We need to stop kidding ourselves. We're believing in a reality that just does not exist. Simply because a person gets up and makes a speech doesn't improve conditions on the ground. We still have police brutality. We still have an inordinately high rate of incarceration. None of these things has improved. And we're still going with the okey doke of, well, we'll form a different party and what? You form a different party. And our parties, which tell us of all these things that are possible that could happen, our parties are not in our neighborhoods. Our parties are not addressing the situation on the ground. Our parties are living in a kind of la-la land that has no connection to the realities that people are dealing with every single day. So is it time for a revision? Or is it time for a recall? Are we talking here about a new kind of politics? Is it devolution or evolution or revolution? What are we talking about? I'm asking you to inform me today. Where do you think we are with our politics and our power? A real, serious, and frank assessment. And especially in light of what we know, intuitively, we know what's coming down the pike. How are we in any way prepared to deal with it? I'll stop here and we'll take a pause and come back to your comments and analyses and so forth at 888-874-4888 right after this brief pause. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we really want to start this idea of re-examining, or in some cases, just plain examining. What are we, how do we define our politics and our power? And especially in the situation that we're in. What is our understanding of our politics and our power. Gwen from New York, you start us off today.
Hi, Therese.
Hello.
How are you? I'll start with how are you. You could say you're okay, okay? I just wanted to thank you so much because you have just said exactly, well, I said it last night. I was on a radio show last night saying the same thing. It is time to stop analyzing this guy. We already know what this guy has in store for us, and he's moving very quickly. As you heard, the Philadelphia Daily News, you know, printed a very interesting story the other day about Trump taking the first piece of dictatorship, and, you know, nobody even raised an eyebrow about it. He gets on the national TV and says, look, if I want to go ahead and pardon myself, I can. So, to me, them just fighting words. And I will tell you that I think that we are a country without representation. And I don't think that you can count on the people in political office. I didn't see too many shakeups last night with the primaries. Even where my mother lives, they opted to go with the go-along, get-along guy. When they had two really great progressive candidates, they decided to just keep going down the same path. So I think as far as ideas are concerned, that I don't go to government sources to get things solved because they only come in at the very end when they want to collect the credit for what you just did. So I think that in terms of organizing, we need to actually, our government has a second government. It's called the deep state. Why don't we, the people, start forming our own government to circle their government? So that we can start participating in what's going on. That's one thing I think we could do. I don't know how it would all work out. It's just a thought I have because you were asking for solutions and obviously nobody has, you know, one solution. I think if anybody had a solution, we'd be there. But I do think that no matter what you impeach this guy on, no matter what the cause, even if it's a green toenail, I think he should be impeached. I think he's truly unfit. I am sure that he's on his way to being a dictator, but I think that globally that people better look out for the rest of the world leaders because they too are dictators and the planet's getting smaller and smaller for regular people. And I see we're coming into a crash collision with climate change. And I think that this is where the rubber's really going to meet the road. This is where martial law is going to come in.
I'm talking, Gwen. I agree with you on these separate, discrete areas, but I'm looking for a sense from you as to what is our big picture as non-conformists, as opposition to the norm. What is the big picture that you get for us? What do you see?
For our future, for the near future and the far future, is that the question?
No, I'm asking what do you see?
What I see is pretty much a guy laying down the same footwork as Hitler did, and the reason why it's I can visually see it is because when I see all those little kids coming from across the border and being shoved into a Walmart so nobody can see them. And a public official cannot even go in to check on their welfare and see what's going on. I see that, you know, many, many people when Hitler happened said, well, you know, they came to get the gays and I didn't care. And they came for the Catholics and then they came for the Jews. And then there was nobody left for me. And I kind of feel like we're at that beginning place. And why would you be surprised? I mean, Trump, the only thing he reads is the books about Hitler. That's pretty much all he does read. That's it. And he is a man with a 6-year-old personality. But don't discount him. He's a very dangerous person, and he has a tremendous amount of power. And what would happen if the United States falls under a dictator with all of the enormous firepower we have?
But I'm talking in a way beyond Trump. Because I think we have a good reading on Trump. I'm asking about how do we harness our power? How do we redefine? We're using the same old tactics. And
we gather
signatures and we get on the ballot. And the time is gone for that. We need new tactics and new visions.
I agree with
Thanks, Ben,
and,
for getting us started today. Thank you.
Okay, thank
Steve,
you.
Steve, you're on the air. What do we do to redefine our politics and reshape our power?
Yeah, hello? Am I on now?
Yes.
Oh,
you're on.
Yeah, see, I don't understand what that last woman just said. Trump is a diversion. It's something that the media can concentrate on. The problem is so much deeper than that. And I think what we're witnessing is the downfall of America. This is Rome, okay? People are, you know, busy living on their cell phones. Personally, I've about given up. I don't think anything's going to happen. Things are just going to get less and less, sometimes more slowly, sometimes more quickly. I live in New York. I'm going to the country. I'm buying a place, which thank God I can do. I'm going to grow my own food. I'm going to give it to people that don't have any. And I don't know what else to do anymore. I'm totally disgusted. And, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans are the same party, folks. They're all the banking party. They're the same. You know, and everything is baloney. And, you know, that's how I feel. I'm just totally pessimistic. I have had it. And I don't see any signs of anything happening.
When did you begin to feel totally pessimistic? That means, and I have to define it, that means that you sensed that what it would take to fix the situation is beyond you and millions of people like you and me.
In the 80s, and I can tell you almost the exact time. It was the time that maybe some people could relate to this, when Lou Reed came out with a record called New York. And I think that was in the mid-80s. And all of a sudden, I got totally pessimistic, which was interesting because I went the next week to a concert at the Knitting Factory. I'm a jazz person. And one of the guys that was playing just all of a sudden stopped. He said, anybody notice how bad things have gotten all of a sudden? And he felt exactly the same way I did. And there were about 20 people in the audience that, you know, said exactly the same thing. All of a sudden, there was this time. You know, I didn't analyze it all that much or get into it, but I think a lot of people felt that way. No particular event happened, but it was a time everybody just became pessimistic. And I felt, you know, fairly hopeless that time. And it's just gotten worse for
anything,
me.
Did anything develop politically, whether within the two-party system or outside of it, that made you feel, well, okay, this is something I could support?
No, there was nothing that I could support. Yeah, I saw the Democrats for what they were from the Vietnam War. That's when I was about 18 and growing up. And I saw what a bunch of crap everything was, okay? And it's just gotten worse and more pervasive. Now it's so much in your face, but people are so much more ignorant now of things. And so much, I mean, it's just hard for me to even walk down the streets in New York anymore. You know, I'm just so disgusted with everything. You know, everybody's on their cell phones, and they don't relate at all, and people's manners have gotten much worse. You know, I have just had it.
Okay. Have you had it also with third parties?
Yeah. I listen to you a lot because I have to agree with what you said. Now, Obama was a terrible president. Okay? I was a big civil rights guy from the time I was in grade school because of my parents. You know, people totally, you know, think, you know, that he's just wonderful, and they got totally taken in by that. You know, he was a politician, plain and simple, a public relations stunt. And, you know, people are still fighting about that. You know, they can impeach Trump tomorrow, and things won't change. The CIA will do what it does around the world. They'll be killing people that nobody seems to care about. I mean, you know, look what's going on. It's very hard for me. I know I'm rambling a little bit, but I'm just very, very depressed about the whole thing.
I can hear it. And I hope that you would help us get closer to the answer to the question.
Third parties don't seem to want to do. They don't seem to want to do anything. I mean, you know, I voted for Jill Stein. I voted for her twice. Before that, I voted for Ralph Nader. Okay? I supported Bernie, but I was suspicious of Bernie, and my suspicions have come true. He's totally sold out. Whether they literally put a gun to his head or not, I don't know. But, you know, forget about that. You know, he won't get a cent from me again, nor will I vote for him unless things change radically. I just don't see anything happen. And the powers that be have such forces to control things now. It is just, you know, I just don't see anything else to do. And there's certain friends of mine are saying the same thing, that what they're doing is they're just heading for the hills and trying to have as good a life as they can, that to do things politically. And, you know, I'm somewhat of an activist. I got arrested during Black Lives Matters. I, you know, sat down on 96th Street and Broadway. And, you know, what did it do? Did it change? No. You know, it's the same thing. It's just getting worse.
Hmm. Well,
you know,
thank you for sharing
your
personal thoughts.
Yeah.
I'm sorry? I didn't hear the last sentence. Oh, he's gone. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hope you're feeling well.
Yes, I'm trying. What are your thoughts on this matter of where are we going? Do you have a sense that we headed in the right direction or even in any direction that would allow us to establish our own kind of political agenda and pursue it and harness the power that we have to do something? And what would that something be? Is this too tall an order?
Well, I think in the last election that we had last year, we had a golden opportunity to do something, but we failed to do it. Before I say any more about that, for the last caller, yeah, Bernie was a sellout, but Bernie's a rich person, and that's what makes me laugh, how people ran to Bernie, 13 million votes. He's a rich person. He's in for the rich, all right? Let's end this Bernie thing for once and for all. He's been over there in Vermont for 36 years. Nice, cushy job taking care of rich people. I'm sick of hearing about him. This is where people think they have to do to change things, to be tricked. We're being tricked. The people of America are like to be entertained. That's all they care about, entertainment. They don't watch the debates because they care about the issues that are being... They want to be entertained. It's a disgrace. Will we ever think of putting a cup of sugar into our gas tank of our cars? No, we wouldn't do that because it would ruin the car, but we don't mind putting cups of sugar in our mouths. We don't mind what we're doing to our bodies and then become dependent on their doctors keeping us alive with their medications and all the bullshit. You know, we had an opportunity after Obama was the president for 8 years on the backs of black people polarizing. Supposedly, if the votes counted, they said 96% of black voters voted for Obama. That's not a stretch. I was black, and I'm white. I would vote for Obama, too, because I want things to be even. I want people to stop being persecuted and put down. I want things to get better. But Obama wasn't the answer. When George Bush Sr. said, New World Order. He didn't say New United States Order. He said New World Order. That means the whole world. That means all the nations. That means all the leaders of all the countries, except maybe Haiti and Cuba and a couple more, are all involved in this thing to get rid of us and keep us controlled. That's how 10% has been controlling 90% for the last thousands and thousands of years. because they
use
tricks.
But the question I want you to focus on, the question I want some kind of an answer from you about is, what do you see as the resistors having power? What kind of power is it? Are you convinced that we are at a point of critical mass where we could influence any political changes at all?
I don't. Do people understand that the Green Party was just trying to get 5% of the vote so they could be in the debates? Because if you're not in the debates, then nobody pays any attention to you. You're not a legitimate party, and you're nobody that we should pay attention. Me, in my mind, I believe that the Green Party did get 5% many times, many elections, but they lied to us and tell us they didn't. They made Ralph Nader the scapegoat with Bush and Gore, that he got 3.5%, and that caused Bush to win. So Nader said, "The hell with you, I won't be doing this anymore. I'm not going to run anymore." So now we got Jill Stein. We had a golden opportunity. After Obama was president for 8 years, a black man, you run a black party and you make a black candidate, and then you get the 12% to go to him, and then they can't lie to us and say that black people didn't vote for the black man. Why can't we wake up?
Well, thank you, E, for your thoughts today. And
remember,
I hear the passion in your voice, and I certainly appreciate the force with which you see the potential of us getting someplace else, but if only we organize ourselves differently. Thank you so much. Bruce from New York, you're on the air.
How are you, Trish?
Hello.
Hello. I think the answer to your question is perdition. I think we are going to perdition. People talk about Trump, but Trump is not substantially different. I mean, he may, you know, so for 20 years now, I've been saying that this country is a fascist country. And the classical definition for fascism is the conjoining of political and economic interest forces. And even without Trump, we have had that conjoining going on for decades, maybe even centuries. Yeah. I don't think we can avoid it. I mean, everything has been hollowed out. I mean, we don't control education. They've taken that from us. They have us on cell phones. They have us atomized. So nobody really talks to anybody anymore. And everybody is trying to make a living. I mean, you know, we are as separate as can be. I mean, a nation state, to call this a nation, it may be an anachronism, you know. I don't see any nationhood among the people in this country. I see a number of people all busy running in different directions in order to survive, you know. And there's no unity, no nation, no nationhood, as far as I see. And I think they're going to perdition. I don't think perdition is going.
But surely you have some kind of a glimmer of hope about the capacity to change something, to change course or to change direction, to change your way of thinking and doing things.
Yeah, but you treat it at a personal level. I mean, I don't like the word hope at all, and I don't like being given a bad reputation by people. So I don't like hope, but I'm not, I don't lack hope. I mean, I have hope in being able to do things myself, about my children and that type of thing. But hope as a political word, I mean, it has such negative connotations to me that when I hear it, my whole being repelled from it, right? Because I feel people, or change, for instance, or even transformation, I repel from these things because they don't have any meanings anymore. I mean, people can always double talk these things into meaning something else than they gave you the impression they would mean when they get into office, right? And I'm not even sure anymore that we should be investing power in any small number of people. If we really want to do something, we have to take back our power. We have to have the not vote for people to rule over us, you know. And I don't think anybody is going to want to take that on. I mean, I don't think there's any critical mass out there willing to say, well, look, I mean, why can't people retain their power and have their power on a daily basis instead of investing the power into people who have turned their backs on us for 300 years? I mean, you know, what more do we want to see? I mean, this thing is a charade. You're running to vote every couple of years and you're back in the same position again. So I see this country as a fascist country. Americans don't really care about what the empire does abroad, for instance. I mean, right now, this country has troops in Syria illegally. And, I mean, that doesn't bother anybody. You know, it doesn't bother anybody that we've invaded a country illegally, you know, under pretext that we're looking to kill terrorists, right? When we have other agendas in place and threatening the country itself, saying that you can't fly over this area that we are controlling, you know. I mean, what is this? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, this can't go on forever. I mean, this has to come to an end. And I see the end coming. I see perdition coming, you know. And that's my, you know, I've had this conversation with you before. And I'm sorry I can't be more hopeful, as you said. But, I mean, you know, I can't.
Blindly hopeful. I meant hopeful in the sense that some things are in play that perhaps need to be tinkered with and you know, refined. But in that sense, I mean hope. Not, you know, in the tra-la-la sense of hope.
Yeah, okay. All right, but when I look at the big picture, go ahead.
No, so I'm asking, do you have a sense that we have time?
No, I don't think so either.
Define or redefine our politics and redefine our strategy and redefine our approach to power.
No, I don't think so. I think what has to happen is that the systems of the world have to collapse before we can get to a stage where we can make a difference again. I don't see how we can make a difference with all these forces against us. I mean, and you can choose any number of them. You know, so any number. I mean, I can choose maybe 20 or 30 different forces that are militating against us right now. Look at nuclear weapons, for instance. We are under more danger now than we were during the Cold War, for instance. Yeah. I mean, people have more information and people can see clearly that, you know, if you look at the environment, I mean, whatever you look at, we are in more perilous circumstances than we have been ever. But, I mean, this universe has been known to renew itself from time to time. And we may be approaching that point. In fact, the original Americans here stated that we are at a point where we have to make a choice and we may go into a dead end and, you know, and the world may be able to regenerate itself at some point in the future. But it may be a point where human beings are not there. I mean, that's what I'm talking about when I say perdition, because I do not believe that we have the intention to do anything to change the trajectory on which we are headed right now.
Hmm. Well, thank you, Bruce, for your call today. Very sobering thoughts. CC from New York, you're on the air.
You, Therese, I must first say
hello.
You are. How are you? Can you hear me?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
Great,
yes.
Great. I want to thank you for being a genius, for being a master and some sort of a wizard at what you do, because I want to thank the what I call the leaders, the lead story leaders, for also bringing their genius and wizardry and expressions to this day. I think it's very interesting what everyone has said, because it's been important. It's somewhat, I'm going to bring some contrast, and that contrast is that it's a little simpler and frankly easier. I go back to the statement or the saying, what is old is new again. And there's a word in a dictionary. The first letter is the 22nd letter of the alphabet, and the last letter of the word is the 15th letter of the alphabet. And we need to bring in some very spiritual people, particularly Haitians. If we study what the Haitians did around Napoleon Bonaparte's military, And it's a non-physical thing now. We're at a place where between now and 2000, as far as the question with the Democrats and the Republicans, it's a uniparty, it's a duopoly, as you say, Tweedledee, Tweedledum. So we see what happens and how well people do in various states. But in the meantime, we can be learning with the intelligence of this audience and other audiences, we can be learning how to release the dual part of ourselves, and that is the physical and the non-physical, the visible and the non-visible, to make a difference here. We're seeing it in martial arts, the power that's being mustered up by martial artists to be able to make serious differences in power. I've seen a man that was like 60-some years old pushing back on individuals that were in their 20s with a kangaroo hat on and a golf jacket. What is that about? So we can learn that. The intelligence here can learn that and make the difference that needs to be made. If we're looking for something to turn up, we need to begin with our sleeves. If it's the B, it's up to me. We can do this because we are the majority and we are the most powerful. They have us thinking that we're not because we're reading things and we're reading the wrong message. But we have the influence to make it happen. That's what I say.
But put that now in a political context for me so that I could understand it better.
Okay.
I appreciate the point that you're making, and as it applies on a personal level, individuals making particular changes and developing their own personal powers to varying degrees.
And then it becomes collective.
But as a social movement,
yes,
as a resistance, a force of resistance to the craziness that we are exposed to every single day, do you get the sense that we are, what Bruce called it, we are on the road to perdition? Do you share that view?
No, not at all. Not at all. Because what I see every season, I live in the north, the New York, New Jersey area. What I see what happens in the fall, and then I see what happens in the spring. I see recycling. I see the old, and I see the life, and I see green. And so that applies to us. Now, what do we do collectively? This could happen with the listeners. This could happen with the lead story leaders in making a commitment to learn about this non-physical force that the Haitians used against Napoleon Bonaparte. That can happen just like the president, Obama became president. It was a ground force, but this can be a spiritual force that can happen after the show, before the show, because we would understand a power and a force that is scaring the socks off of those oligarchs. Scaring the socks off. All you got to do is look in the dictionary and see what it's saying to us. And it's not true.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your call.
You're very welcome.
I do want to squeeze this one call in. Jeff from New Jersey, you're going to close us out today, but give us something to really ponder.
Well, like this caller was talking about, we need to start with the ground force, and that is neighbor to neighbor. You go house to house, and you make your block a force in the city, and then you make your city a force in the state. We have to build it from the ground up. Elect Obama was just not wasn't the answer because we didn't put support under his feet. We didn't put fire under his feet. And that's what we're going to need to do. Now, we have teachers in four or five different states that went on strike, teachers that were making $15,000 a year, not guaranteed to get their job back, all right, because they went out on strike. This is what we need to do. Us 50, 60-year-olds need to take the lead. Take the lead, we get some balls, and you say, you know what? No matter what they do to me, I'm going to set my children free. I'm going to set my grandchildren free. No matter what the cost to me physically or mentally, I am going to do this. And that was the attitude in the 1960s. That was the attitude when they started marching and the riots in the 70s. It was that I don't care what's going to happen to me, but I am going to leave a better world for my children and my grandchildren. And that is exactly what we're going to have to do. Is get some balls, and if we take to the streets, we need to take to the streets with some meaning. A lot of these movements led by youth are not going to be sustained because they don't understand some of the complexities in life. You know, they haven't been out in life to deal with some of the personal and social politics. So us older folks are going to have to roll up our sleeves. We have to get uncomfortable, and that's what it is. But there is. And I talked with, like the gentleman was saying, it's just a spiritual movement. things can be moved with your spirit. That's why I said before, go back to church. Because if Jesus is going to come back, Jesus is going to have to come back within individuals. What I mean is
thank
Christ.
You, and we're out of time. I'm so sorry to say. But I thank you for contributing today so meaningfully. I thank you all. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Global Alert News, and we'll see each other tomorrow. Thank you again for making this a profitable time together. Bye-bye.